fourth round squat.
Sorry, I'm breaking.
Fifth round high knee with a pause. So bring your knee up, hold it at the top, just for, you know, a beat or two. Sixth round, left hand punch only. Left hand punch, left hand hook. Seventh round, right hand. Last round, 30 speed, six knockouts. All right.
In a small gym in South Texas, at a town called Schertz, a cluster of people who, at first glance, might look more suited to a gentle Tai Chi class, don boxing gloves, and pair off with punching bags.
For 20 total minutes, crank it in 5, 4, 3.
And start punching.
Go.
Each of these fierce, focused fighters has Parkinson's disease, and they're doing a boxing workout called the bike.
In effect, it's like they're riding a bike while they're punching. So you got a lot going on. You know, you're breathing, you have your bracing for your abs, you get your legs moving, you get your feet going, your hands going, you know. So there's a lot of neural activity there.
Steve Payne is a personal trainer and founder of More Than Boxing, an exercise program for people with Parkinson's.
In doing that, you can create new neural pathways and thereby stimulate brain activity.
In recent years, exercise has become a first-line treatment for Parkinson's disease. Research has found that certain kinds of physical activity help manage symptoms like poor balance, rigidity, and slowness, and slows the progression of the disease. People who do it stay healthier longer.
All right, three counts.
One round down.
Three counts.
5, 4.
Boxing is one of those activities.
It's neurologically stimulating, okay, because it's a high activity, high intensity, forced intensity, better term, aerobic activity, that plays on both the neurologic and the aerobic capacity. So I found through research that high intensity aerobic activity stimulates neural activity.
Payne sounds more like a Parkinson's doctor when you talk to him than a personal trainer, but he's certified in this and has been leading this class for about a decade. He knew when he first heard about the program called Rock Steady Boxing that he had to get involved.
Reason being, my father had Parkinson's, and so I thought maybe I could do something with my dad. I never got the opportunity to. My dad had heart problems, and so he died in May of 2016. So I never got to really do anything with my dad, but to honor him, I continued the program.
Parkinson's disease is currently incurable, but over the decade Payne has been running this program, there has been a dramatic transformation in how we understand and treat this neurological movement disorder. So much progress that even the most sober scientists are now talking in terms of cures. What's the latest? Stick around to find out. From Texas Public Radio, this is Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri.
Support for TPR comes from the University of Texas at San Antonio's Brain Health Consortium, a pioneering research hub advancing neuroscience, neuroengineering, precision medicine, and more. Learn more at utsa.edu/BHC.
Let's start back at the gym where TPR's Sally Aranda talked with Steve Payne and his boxing students, including Donna Rudolph Miller. About a decade ago, Donna started to shake, whole body shaking that seemingly came out of nowhere. And while tremor can be an early sign of Parkinson's disease, it took a while for her doctors to connect the dots.
I was young.
Uh-huh.
My symptoms presented like Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. I had full body tremors. And that's not common, especially if I was in my 50s at the time. Finally, went through all sorts of meds, trying this, trying that, trying the other. Some of them making me horribly, horribly sick. So finally, Dr. Alvarez said, okay, we've exhausted everything. Let's try the drugs for Parkinson's.
The medication significantly reduced her tremors, and she had a diagnosis. Now what? A chance meeting with a stranger who recognized the signs of Parkinson's told Donna about Steve Payne and his boxing program.
I had just lost my father, and this guy, this guy saved my life.
Timing.
It was just somebody up there was watching out for me and got me to him, and I've been boxing ever since.
When you think of a boxer, a friendly senior citizen in black sweats and a vivid pink tee isn't exactly what comes to mind. But Donna has been hitting the bags for 9 years.
It's working on the core, working on your balance, which is a biggie for all of us.
She says it has significantly slowed down the progression of her disease, and she's seen others actually improve.
I've seen what he's done for people. People who've come with walkers who started walking with canes and reversed because their balance got that much better.
It's clear that exercise like this does work. But how? Why? To even begin to answer that question, we have to know more about what Parkinson's is. I asked Dr. Layla Sinatpour to talk to us about it. She's an assistant professor of neurology who specializes in movement disorders at UT Health San Antonio. Oh, hi, Dr. Sinatpour. So let's just start with that. What is Parkinson's disease?
So Parkinson's disease is a neurodegenerative disorder. There's two ways to describe this disease. One way is the chemical part of the disease, where there's loss of dopamine. So Parkinson's symptoms appear when a certain amount of dopaminergic neurons in the brain are lost. They're degenerated. They're not there. They're died.
All right. So it's a disease of dopamine deficiency. What is the other way to describe it?
The other way to describe it is that there is a protein called alpha-synuclein that everybody has it, but in Parkinson's disease, it gets misfolded, meaning that it goes into a weird shape and it gets deposited into different parts of the body, including the brain and even under the skin. When these two, the physiologic, the chemical part of it and the pathologic part of it, which is the alpha-synuclein, both of them happen, there's a constellation of motor and non-motor symptoms that appear.
Motor symptoms in Parkinson's are those that relate to movement. Non-motor symptoms can be physical, emotional, or neurological.
Usually non-motor symptoms come first, like constipation, loss of sense of smell. All of those little things, cognitive impairment can be part of it. And then motor symptoms appear later, and the motor symptoms include hand tremor, stiffness, and slowness of movement.
It's still unclear what triggers the cascade of symptoms that characterize Parkinson's, but Sinatpour says it involves both the brain and the gut.
That's why constipation is one of the very early symptoms of Parkinson's. But on the other side, the other scientists, the group of scientists, they believe that it starts in the brain or the nuclei of the brain, which is like, small, deep part of the brain. So there's still a debate of where exactly it begins. We still cannot pinpoint, or it could be different in any individual. One's Parkinson's may start in the gut. The other person's Parkinson's may start in the brain. So it actually may start from different areas in different people. That's why we see presentations of Parkinson's very differently. One has tremor, one doesn't have tremor. One has gait impairment, the other one doesn't have. So although there are the shared signs and symptoms in Parkinson's, not everybody experiences the same journey.
At Steve Payne's gym, they say if you met one person with Parkinson's, you've met one person with Parkinson's. The experience of the disease is so individual. Is it possible that the causes could also be really individual with each person dealing with their own recipe of genes and environment?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So nowadays we know that about like maybe 5 to 10% of Parkinson's patients do have a genetic mutation or a genetic predisposition to the disease. There are 7 common genes that we know that are pathogenic in Parkinson's, meaning that they cause Parkinson's. But there are also other risk signals along everybody's DNA that can predispose one to get Parkinson's. But what makes one get Parkinson's and the other person doesn't could be the environmental toxins playing the part. So I think it's both together. Someone's genetics plus the environmental risk factors that they go through their life that can bring out Parkinson's symptomatically in an individual. But there is definitely both.
Okay, so there are so many connections coming to me listening to you talk about this. When you talk about the gut and the brain, it makes me think of the decades of research that show that there's this sort of back and forth communication between the gut and the brain, and then dopamine deficiency. Dopamine, of course, is a neurotransmitter that is produced both in the brain and the gut, and gut bacteria has a big role in that. So one of my favorite topics is the microbiome. Talk to me about that.
We all live in our bacteria inside our bodies. We do have bacteria inside on our skins. We do have bacteria inside our nose, mouth, everybody, all everywhere through the body, always through the bowels. Called the flora or the normal flora of the guts, that there are bacteria there that they work and they actually help our body. Their role is critical for the bowels to function properly and for the stool to be soft and normal. So if you take that bacteria away, there's a higher chance that we have bowel dysfunction. I'm going to give an example. For example, if someone uses antibiotics for a long time, they're going to get diarrhea or constipation and other gut problems. One is that they're going to remove that normal bacteria that live there, the microbiome. So the bowels have to function there properly for our bowels to function properly.
All right, so right there, you referred to bacteria as a bug, and that made me think of pesticides. I know it's pretty well established that exposure to some specific pesticides is linked to Parkinson's. So could these pesticides be lethal to important gut bugs, too?
Maybe. That's a very good question. So the main impact is that those pesticides could be neurotoxins. So they find their way to our nerves and the brain, and they start killing the little nerves there. The main risk factor is basically about the neurotoxicity of those pesticides. But it's a good question whether it actually does something to the guts as well.
Early symptoms of Parkinson's can be constipation, as you mentioned, and loss of the ability to smell. And one that I didn't know about until recently from talking to you was that people with Parkinson's can start acting out their dreams.
Yes, so it's called the REM sleep behavior disorder. Sleep consists of different phases. There's a REM phase, R-E-M, and there's a non-REM phase. So during the REM phase sleep, it's a very deep sleep that we dream a lot in it, and the body has to be fully paralyzed. So it doesn't have to move. The only parts of the body that move during the REM sleep are the eyes. They can track the dreams, but all the other parts of the body have to be very still during the REM sleep. And an individual starts acting out those dreams, meaning that the hands or the arms, or they jump off of the bed, or they actually chase after during the REM phase of the sleep. It's a disorder. It's called the REM sleep behavior disorder, and it's amongst one of those non-motor signs of Parkinson's that precede Parkinson's in years.
So if someone is experiencing this constellation of symptoms, they should let their doctor know, because the earlier a person is diagnosed, the earlier they can start a program that might slow the progression of their disease, and that includes exercise.
What we know so far is that the group of patients with Parkinson's disease who do exercise, high-intensity exercise, cardiovascular exercise, they do much better compared to the group that don't do the high-intensity exercise. So exercise does play a disease-modifying role in Parkinson's.
More on that when Petri Dish continues.
Support for Petri Dish is made possible by UT Health San Antonio's Mays Cancer Center, South Texas NCI-designated cancer center, providing cancer care for patients, advancing research, and educating the next generation of leaders. Mace Cancer Center is working to end cancer in South Texas and beyond. Learn more at macecancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Petri Dish. I'm Buddy Petri. Back at the Academy of Martial Arts in Schertz, Texas, the rhythm of the gloves hitting the bags sounds like a heartbeat. The boxers are doing intense, repetitive movements like hooks and jabs and footwork too, like the legendary boxer Muhammad Ali, who lived with Parkinson's disease for more than 30 years. They stick and move. They try to float like butterflies and sting like bees.
Exercise just makes things better, you know? We like to say that exercise makes people harder to kill and generally more useful. And it, you know, we try to make it fun. We have a good time in here. There's camaraderie. I'm the outsider in here because I don't have Parkinson's. So I'm the odd man out. So everybody else has Parkinson's. So it's a place where they can come and everybody else is just like them.
Personal trainer Steve Payne says this type of non-contact boxing is the perfect whole brain and body exercise for someone focused on slowing the progression of Parkinson's disease.
Because it uses so many varying functions of the brain in the cross-kinetic chain, you know, left, right, up, down, side to side. Plus, we add in some vocalization to stimulate and maintain vocal capability.
And there's the warm-up.
Put your hands on the wall, you know, and stretch your wrists out. You know, rigidity is a big issue in Parkinson's. So we want to keep things mobile. Keep the mobility joints mobile. Keep the stability joints stable. And then we'll do some active, dynamic type stretching movement. You know, warming things up.
And the part where the boxers are just, you know, together in a community. If Payne didn't know before what a difference his work makes, COVID taught him.
A lot of the folks that I didn't see for months to a year, the dramatic difference in what they were doing when they were coming here versus not, the decline of their capability. It was heartbreaking. I cried a lot, you know, just because it's just heartbreaking seeing people. It's amazing the difference that exercise and community can do for people.
Dr. Leila Sadatpour is an assistant professor of neurology who specializes in movement disorders at UT Health San Antonio, and she agrees and says while there are medicines to help with a variety of motor and non-motor symptoms of Parkinson's.
What we know so far that actually slows the progression of the disease is physical exercise. So aerobic exercise, 20 to 30 minutes of high-intensity cardio exercises. Research nowadays has proved that it slows Parkinson's disease progression. So that's the top recommendation. That's the top treatment or cure would be physical exercise. That has to be part of the routine of everybody's life.
And she's very enthusiastic about boxing.
Yes, so boxing has a really surprising and exciting role in helping patients with Parkinson's.
Why?
So with boxing, it involves big motions of all of the joints of the body, big motions of the shoulders, big motions of your whole body. And big exercises in general are important in Parkinson's because with the disease itself, patients tend to walk or move in general slower and at smaller amplitude. So with boxing, we use that full motion, which is really important. But it's not only about that physical work of it, because it's a combination of physical and mental work. So you have to be precise of your next move. You have to plan ahead for your next move, plus that your next move is going to be a big move, and it's going to be a strong move. So it's going to help strengthening your muscles and your joints and your whole body. Plus, it's cardio, so it helps your heart beat faster, and it involves your brain. So that's why it's just a perfect type of activity.
Physical activity also produces dopamine, which is lacking in people with Parkinson's.
Yes. So with the exercise, it produces our own dopamine, the endogenous dopamine. It's not an external pill. It's the dopamine that your own body tries to produce, and that's very important. I think the physical activity is part of it, but specifically with the rock steady boxing classes for Parkinson's, part of it is because you get along with the community, and you get to meet your people that are like, you know, not everybody is like each other. Everyone has their own Parkinson's, but you get together with the community, you talk with other people. That's also important in that dopamine production.
When I think of dopamine, I think about mood. Does dopamine deficiency in Parkinson's influence mood too?
It does, certainly. Anxiety and depression, they come along with Parkinson's.
How about motivation?
Oh, absolutely. I'm happy you brought it up. Not having the motivation. We call it apathy. So apathy is one of the very, very common non-motor signs of Parkinson's. It's also very challenging to treat it because it's not as simple as anxiety or depression. So it doesn't always get better with dopaminergic medicines. Exercise, for example, is something that helps apathy. More than appeals, you know.
And so for a person who's challenged by apathy as a factor of their progressive disease, it must be really difficult to just get to the gym in the first place. So you must be really proud of your patients who participate in groups like this.
Yeah, they always inspire me because, you know, even a lot of us that we don't have Parkinson's, motivation is an issue. Going to the gym, doing 3 times a day exercise with a group of people, it's hard to arrange it. And they still do it, regardless of all the barriers and the disability that they have. They get on and they do that exercise, and that's actually a cycle. The moment you do it, you're more motivated to do it. And it's hard to get it started, but once you get on a routine of exercises, it keeps going. I always admire them.
Speaking of people we admire, Michael J. Fox was diagnosed with this disease back in 1991. And I know that since then, the landscape has utterly transformed. Talk to us about that.
We've come from very limited number of treatments for Parkinson's. We just had a couple of, you know, medical treatments a few decades ago. Nowadays, we have a lot more symptomatic treatments for Parkinson's, and the researchers are working on a disease-modifying therapy. On the other side, with the deep brain stimulation for Parkinson's, it's going more toward like biomarkers and AI-guided stimulation and programming. So I think we're going through disease-modifying stage, as well as more using, you know, the artificial intelligence and the biomarkers to guide us as clinicians.
It really feels like things are moving pretty quickly in your field.
I think it's actually changing very rapidly. So previously we were focusing on symptomatic therapy, and now we are targeting the disease itself, and we are moving toward precision medicine. Individualized therapy. So we are looking at individuals' DNA, genome, risk factors, and we try to treat their Parkinson's. So I think the future of Parkinson's is going to be focusing on precision medicine. So the goal is to come up with some sort of individualized therapy for Parkinson's. And the main focus is going to be on the disease modifying aspect of it. Can we reverse the progression?
It sounds like there's quite a bit of hope there, too.
Yeah, there is hope. There's also a big hope for those with genetic variants of Parkinson's. So I encourage the patients with Parkinson's to actually get tested genetically for it. Because if they happen to have a gene mutation, nowadays we are very close to come up with a treatment or a cure for some genetic variants.
I mentioned Michael J. Fox a minute ago, and when he announced that he had Parkinson's, it was like hearing your favorite uncle or brother, like his life was ending. The public really didn't know much about Parkinson's back then, and I remember feeling just heartbroken. And he has faced incredible challenges with such grace. And I think that his advocacy, at least in part, is why a person getting the same diagnosis today faces a very different kind of future, right?
It's not actually a bad disease to have, because I'm pretty positive that we're going to come up with some sort of cure very soon.
I hope so. I hope so very much. Thank you, Dr. Sanatpour. Dr. Layla Sadatpour is an assistant professor of neurology who specializes in movement disorders like Parkinson's disease at UT Health San Antonio. This episode of Petri Dish was produced by Jacob Rosati, TBR Vice President of News, Dan Katz, and me. I wrote the show, Jacob composed all the music, created the sound design, and edited the script. A special shout out and thank you to TBR reporter Celia Ronda for her reporting on this story. Petri Dish is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Bonnie Petri. Talk to you soon.